5 people are dead. That's where we have to start. I'm Tower on ATIS, Radio Hangar's aviation news segment, and this one is going to take some time, because when a Boeing 767 cargo jet crosses the perimeter fence at Miami International and strikes vehicles on the other side, this is not just a headline. This is a conversation every pilot in the fleet should be having right now. Let me walk you through what we know. On Sunday, a 21 air freighter operating under Amazon Air livery landed at Miami International and did not stop on the runway. The aircraft crossed the airport perimeter boundary and struck vehicles outside the fence. 5 people were killed. As of this recording, the National Transportation Safety Board has launched a full investigation, and the aircraft is being treated as an active accident scene. 21 Air is a Part 121 cargo carrier based out of Greensboro, North Carolina. They have operated Amazon Air freighter contracts for several years and fly a fleet primarily made up of Boeing 767s. This was not a small regional turboprop or a general aviation aircraft that wandered into something. This was a large commercial freighter on a scheduled cargo operation at one of the busiest international airports in the country. Before we go further, let's take a moment before we talk about investigation factors or runway safety. 5 people are gone. Some of them may not have been connected to aviation at all. When an aircraft crosses a perimeter fence, the people on the other side of that fence did not take off knowing the risk. That matters. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Now let's talk about what happened and why it matters to everyone listening. Runway overruns are one of the most studied accident categories in aviation. The Flight Safety Foundation has cataloged them for decades. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, has issued advisory circulars about them. There are entire runway design standards built around the assumption that an aircraft may not stop in time, and they still happen. They happen to experienced crews in large aircraft at major airports with full instrument landing capability. Here's what you need to know about overrun accidents before the investigation tells us the specifics of this one. The 767 is a wide-body aircraft. In cargo configuration, it is a heavy machine. Miami International's runways are long, well-maintained, and instrumented to high standards. None of that is a guarantee. The physics of stopping a heavy jet do not care about the reputation of the airport or the experience of the crew. What the physics care about is energy. Kinetic energy at landing is a function of mass and velocity. If an aircraft crosses the runway threshold carrying too much speed, that excess energy has to go somewhere. Braking systems, thrust reversers, aerodynamic drag, all of these work to dissipate that energy. But if the math doesn't work out before the pavement ends, the aircraft will continue in whatever direction it's pointed. The NTSB will look at approach speed. They will look at the point of touchdown. If the aircraft landed long, the effective stopping distance is shorter than the published runway length. They will examine the autobrake settings, the deployment of thrust reversers, the tire condition, the runway surface condition, and the crew's decision-making in the final seconds of the approach. They will also look at whether a go-around was an option, and if so, when it stopped being one. This is the uncomfortable question in every overrun accident. There is a point on every approach where a go-around is the correct call. Speed high, not stabilized. Something doesn't feel right, and there is a point past which initiating a go-around introduces its own risk. The investigation will try to determine where this crew was in that decision window and what choices were available to them. I am not speculating about cause. The NTSB process exists precisely to answer these questions systematically, without speculation, using flight data, cockpit voice recordings, radar data, and witness accounts. That process takes time, and it is the right way to do this. What I am doing is giving you the framework that investigators use, because that framework is directly applicable to the aircraft you fly. You do not need to fly a 767 to learn from this accident. The principle of the stabilized approach applies to every aircraft, from a Cessna 172 to a wide-body freighter. The FAA, major airlines, and Flight Safety Foundation all define stabilized approach criteria, typically by 1,000 feet above the ground in instrument conditions or 500 feet in visual conditions. The aircraft should be on the correct flight path, at the correct airspeed configured for landing, with a stable descent rate, and with engines responding normally to thrust inputs. If any of those elements is not present, the standard calls for a go-around. The culture around go-arounds in aviation is complicated. A go-around is technically routine. Procedurally, it is one of the most practiced maneuvers in any instrument training program. But operationally, in the real world, Go-arounds carry social and professional friction. Schedule pressure, fuel considerations, the awareness that the approach looked fine until it didn't. All of these things create hesitation. The research is clear that go-around hesitation contributes to accidents. The research is also clear that executing a go-around confidently when conditions require it is one of the most important skills a professional pilot can maintain. This is not a criticism of the 21 aircrew. We do not know what happened on that approach. What I'm telling you is what the data says across the broader category of runway excursion accidents, because that data is directly applicable to how you fly. Let me take a step back and give you some context on runway excursion numbers. According to the Flight Safety Foundation's Go-Around Decision-Making and Execution Project, runway excursions account for roughly a third of all approach and landing accidents, making them one of the leading categories of serious accidents in commercial aviation worldwide. The Boeing Statistical Summary of Commercial Jet Airplane Accidents consistently shows approach, landing, and landing roll as the most accident-prone phases of flight by a significant margin. The numbers are better than they were 20 years ago, but they are not where anyone wants them. Miami International has engineered materials arresting systems, known as EMAS, at the ends of some runways. EMAS is a crushable concrete bed designed to safely decelerate aircraft that overrun. The system creates drag by crumbling under the weight of the aircraft, absorbing energy. It has saved lives and aircraft in previous incidents. Whether EMAS was present at the end of the specific runway used in this accident, and whether it was engaged are questions the NTSB will address. The fact that the aircraft crossed the perimeter fence and struck vehicles outside the airport boundary is significant. That suggests the overrun continued beyond any arrestor system that may have been in place. The NTSB will map the full path of the aircraft from the point of runway departure through the perimeter fence. Let me also touch on the Amazon Air angle, because it's going to come up. Amazon Air operates its freighter network through contracted carriers. 21 Air is one of those carriers. This is a common structure in the cargo world. Amazon does not hold the air carrier certificate. The contracted carrier holds the certificate, operates under Part 121 rules, and is responsible for their own operations, maintenance, and crew standards. The FAA will be involved not just through the NTSB investigation, but in reviewing 21 Air's operations and oversight. If there are systemic questions about maintenance, training, or safety management at 21 Air, those will be examined. Amazon will also face scrutiny, not necessarily because they operated the aircraft, but because the contracting relationship and the operational demands placed on contracted carriers are a legitimate area of safety research. The pressure that package delivery timelines create on cargo operations is documented in aviation safety literature. Whether that pressure was a factor here, we do not know, but it is a reasonable area of inquiry. For general aviation pilots listening to this, I want to make sure this story translates into something actionable for your flying. Runway overruns happen in small aircraft too. Not just heavy iron, a Piper Archer landing long on a short runway, a Beechcraft Bonanza with a tailwind that was stronger than the forecast, a student who floated too long and ran out of pavement. The factors are the same. The margin is just smaller to begin with. Know your landing distance numbers before you arrive, not just the published performance numbers from the pilot's operating handbook. Account for your aircraft's actual condition, the runway surface, the winds, including any crosswind component, your altitude, the temperature. Hot day, high elevation, soft surface, downslope runway, light tailwind. Every one of those factors adds to your required stopping distance. They compound. The FAA's 50% rule for piston aircraft, meaning you should have 50% of the runway remaining when you reach the midpoint, is a useful real-world check. If you're at midfield and you haven't touched down, you know you're already in a situation that requires a decision. The decision should be a go-around, not a hope. Brief the go-around before every approach, not just instrument approaches, every approach. Know at what point you will commit to a go-around if something isn't right. Make that decision on the ground, in the briefing, before the situation puts you under pressure. Decision-making under stress is degraded. Decision-making under stress with a fast-moving aircraft at low altitude is extremely difficult. The go-around brief converts a complex in-flight decision into execution of a pre-planned response. If your approach doesn't feel right, it probably isn't. Trust that. The skill of recognizing an unstabilized approach is something you build through training and currency. Use it. The NTSB preliminary report on this accident will likely be released within the next few days to a week. That report will contain factual information about the aircraft, the flight, the crew, and the sequence of events as established in the early phase of the investigation. It will not contain probable cause. That determination comes later, sometimes much later. Watch for the preliminary report. Read it. The full investigation will take a year or more. The final report will be worth reading in full when it arrives. Every major accident investigation adds to the body of knowledge that makes aviation safer. The NTSB's accident database is one of the most valuable safety resources available to any pilot, and it is free and public. If you have never spent time reading final accident reports in your aircraft category, I would encourage you to start. 5 people lost their lives Sunday in Miami. That weight doesn't go away when the investigation begins. It doesn't go away when the probable cause is published. The best tribute any pilot can offer is to take these lessons seriously, to fly the numbers, to call the go-around when the go-around is the right call, and to make sure that a runway excursion in your aircraft is the thing that never happens. I drew on reporting from AveWeb and early statements from the National Transportation Safety Board for this segment. More at radiohangar.com. Be safe out there.